welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. With me today is my podcast partner, Mike Gianfagna. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Dan.
Our guests are from eFabless. Mike Wishart is the CEO of eFabless, and Jeff DiCorpo is VP of Business Development. Welcome to the podcast, gentlemen.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
So first, let's start with what brought you to the semiconductor industry. Mike?
So I came at it from different from most entrepreneurs. I was an investment banker for over 30 years, and I covered technology. I started back actually about the birth of the PC, so I had a great seat to watch all this. My career progressed through Smith Barney, then Lehman, and then finally Goldman Sachs, and I had the good fortune to cover this incredible industry. What made me an entrepreneur, though, that's a very different story, because as an investment banker, I don't think you're so much an entrepreneur as you're really benefiting from what all the other entrepreneurs do. And so the jump from that to starting eFabless, that's a whole nother story.
Yeah, we'll get into that. How about you, Jeff? How did you come to the semiconductor industry?
It's very late, actually. So I've actually had, over 30 years now in my career. I started at Hewlett-Packard and all really around product development, more in the product development space, everything from small business to large enterprise data center kinds of compute and storage systems. From there, I went to Jabil Circuit, was a contract manufacturer. But I got an opportunity to join eFabless. I think there's some, it's a kind of a remarkable time right now in the industry in terms of what's going on and what's taking place, and I think that was kind of what attracted me to join the team and to be able to have the opportunity to pursue that.
Great. Yeah, Hewlett-Packard is one of the companies we all know and love. I think Mike and I both joined the industry in the 80s, so we've been around as well.
Indeed. So that was generous, by the way, but we'll leave it at
that. Yeah. So, Mike, you've accomplished a lot in your career. So I have to ask you, why eFabless?
Well, as I indicated before, I don't think as an investment banker you're specifically wired to be an entrepreneur. You're more wired to sort of benefit from all that great work they do. But I didn't really consider myself an entrepreneur per se, and I'd have to say I'm not specifically really wired to do startups for their own sake. What made this different was this was really a dream that a vision and a dream I had had for decades, really going back to sort of the 90s. At that point in time, again, my business is bringing companies public and watching them grow, and I was watching a time where what I felt were very powerful forces were working against innovation. So, that seems a little strange to say. You had a whole world of people getting educated. You would think innovation's just going to explode. But you had all these incredible economies of scale issues. It was really expensive to make hardware, even more so to make chips up front. And product cycles were getting shorter. So all of these things that made it exciting to invest in these areas historically were working against it, right? It's basically upfront costs to get in were too high and time to monetize an opportunity gets shortened. And so it was working against things. And so I was trying to think through that problem and ask myself, okay, how could you restore innovation in such an industry? How could you get it back to a grassroots level? And that started to form some models in my mind. And these, back then, there was, I don't think, any specific name for it. Again, this would have been the 90s. But as we progressed, you'd think of things like community or crowdsourcing or what are now called creator models, or more specifically, eFabless. So anyway, I worked at that. I retired from Goldman in 2011. I, you know, joined boards, and I, but I did continue to work on this model, but I could really never get it there because, you know, I didn't have the technology chops, if you will, to get that done. And then two good friends, one who both of you would know well, Lucio Lanza, who's, you know, quite a visionary in the design automation business, and another fellow who you wouldn't know so well, a fellow named Jack Hughes, who really is a founder of, if you will, community models and things like software. He started Topcoder, for instance. They introduced me to an extremely talented and visionary person who came out of TI named Mohammed Qasim, who actually had a very similar view to mine and very fortunately had done some real great work in sort of advancing it and showing that this is something that could make it a reality. And specifically, he started to work with what had been a very balkanized world and open source, open source design, began to put that together into something that's actually usable to make chips, and then envisioned how you would combine that with a platform to really open designs. And, you know, voila, if you will, the barriers are removed. So there, all of a sudden, I saw an opportunity. Saw an opportunity to do something that I thought made, you know, would make a real difference. And very importantly, was an idea that I felt some real ownership around. And so I jumped in. You know, since then, I'd hardly say things have been simple. We've been at it for a while, but it's all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, last few years has really started to get traction. Along this journey, we picked up some great people. Jeff, you know, Jeff, as you'll see through this, very, very, very much a part of that. And we've picked up some good partnerships. And now now things are really playing out the way we had really hoped that they would.
Yeah, you know, we SemiWiki's been with you guys since the start. And I personally, I'm a big fan of disruptive business models. And, you know, I've seen the trend from, you know, first when we all joined the industry, systems companies made their own chips, and then it went to IDMs, and then it went to fabless, and now it's back to systems companies. And, you know, not all the system companies have the resources of Apple or Google or Amazon. There's a lot of system companies out there that want and need to do their own chips, but they need help. And, you know, that's what attracts me to your business model. But I got to ask you, you know, what do you want to accomplish in the next 2 years with this model?
Yeah, so it's interesting you use the word disruptive, and I think in many ways we're, you know, we are exactly as you say, we're, you know, empowering people to make chips to make their products better. But I think rather than disruptive, we really think of what we're doing as additive, and we'll get to what we do for the next 2 years. It's additive in the sense that we're expanding the market, right? It's our objective to basically change things so that you're going to have many, many more people who are able to create chips. And I use the word create instead of design because I literally mean create, actually make chips, design and make chips. And this is going to, in our mind, expand education. It's going to turn software developers into chip designers, turn hardware developers into chip designers. And at the end of the day, you're going to see many, many, many more chips arise. I'll let Jeff, I think later, Jeff, you're probably well positioned to talk about the programs over the last couple of years that we've done with Google and on our own called Chip Ignite that really opened this process. But the punchline is the things that we've put in place have just taken off. So the last year, in under a year, we've taped out about 250 chips. And each of those, well, a few have come from big companies like IBM and Western Digital, but the vast majority have come from small teams and even individuals. The majority are first-time designers, and many are software and hardware developers, probably a third of them. So you ask, what do I see over the next 2 years? We're gonna take this work that's really come to fruition in the last year, year plus, and we're going to really drive it to prove this model to the world through the sheer volume of designs and numbers in the community. And I think you're also at the end of this 2 years going to begin to see the first chips that are having commercial success. You're going to see us focusing on academia and early stage startups getting to interesting products. I think I'll again let Jeff touch on them both because he's seeing them real world. But we're already seeing these examples that are really cool. For instance, we just had one on our latest program, a student from University of Missouri, who created a chip for sleep apnea detection. I mean, who would have thought? But here's a problem that meets a solution. And that solution was generated by this extremely enterprising woman who is out to remove the middle person in this whole process, and using open source and eFabless could do something that could never been done before. So that's what I think you're going to see. You're going to see a real explosion in the number of designs, and you're going to see some really interesting ones beginning to arise from it.
Yeah, you know, I agree completely. So looking out further, what do you believe the impact of eFabless will be on the industry overall? I mean, do you see a lasting impact?
Yeah. I think things change dramatically, and you put it really well, Dan, as always at the intro here. You know, when you can start to empower every company to be able to be like the Apples and Googles who have now started to create their own silicon, or the automotive companies who are creating their own silicon. People are creating their own silicon because it makes their products better, makes their products a lot better. And then, as we've experienced in the last couple of years, it's also very helpful in supply chain. But it's one thing if you're a company with, you know, endless resources to go do that, but what about everybody else, right? And that's what we're going to do. And so when I think of what we want to do is we want to, if the last, let me put it this way, if the last 40 years have been about economies of scale in the chip business, right, as we've tried to serve mobility and PCs, things like that, and have done it very well, the next 40 years are going to be about unscaling that chip industry, right? How can you make every product better, regardless of its size, by allowing people to make chips to get that done? If I had to pick analogies, I think you can look at software and video. I mean, take a look at YouTube, right? There's no coincidence we talk about our community as being creators. YouTube created, you know, video creators. Before YouTube came along, you really frankly had to go through a studio or a big ad agency. It completely restricted the diversity of the content, the diversity of the people who could make content, the relevance of the content. There just wasn't that much. At this point in time, you've got something like 50 million people who consider themselves creators. You've got more content streamed through YouTube than you do through Netflix. And it just completely changed the entire industry. It's a $100 billion incremental industry that came really out of nowhere. How? By enabling individuals, small companies to do things through video that otherwise weren't able to do before. Same with the App Store, right? So before the App Store, you could develop software, but you sure couldn't get it out to the wide world without tremendous expense. All of a sudden with the App Store, you know, you could do that. And things like Angry Birds arise. We use that example all the time. So those are the models you want to look at. So I don't think we can sit here today and predict exactly how the industry is going to look. When people come through and use our platform and build on the backs of things like open source, but it's going to look very different, and it's going to be very, very big. And the exciting thing comes back to the disruption thing. We think this world is going to be very interesting for everybody in the ecosystem. You know, our business is going to be to enable people to do this by making silicon fast, inexpensive, and easy to do. You've got a tremendous ecosystem that's focused on making things more powerful, use less power, higher performance, right? Smaller area. Those two things are not contradictory, they're complementary. Out of the innovation that, you know, will get created and how we're going to contribute to this industry going forward, out of that are going to come the winners. And I think everyone will benefit. So that's what we see. We see a world moving to a lot more designs because of what we do.
That's a great overview, Mike. Thanks. That's a kind of a different take on the future, a pretty exciting one, actually. I'd like to talk to Jeff a little bit now and get into some of the background about customers and the business model, which is clearly unique and different here from things that we've seen before. Maybe just to start with, you touched on it briefly, Jeff, at the beginning, like what attracted you to eFabless. You mentioned it was a new environment, which is true. Is there one particular thing that sticks in your mind? Is that what was the trend that said, wait a minute, this is a big change and I can be part of it?
Yeah, no, I think so I guess just as a little bit more context, right? So as in my career, I had been fortunate to see a number of, kind of significant transitions in the markets that I was in, really around the data center and kind of storage markets, right? But some significant transitions that took place over that time, and I see similarities, from those experiences with kind of what is, kind of where the current market in the semiconductor industry is poised, right? And for many of the things that Mike described, right? So some of the current consolidation and constraints that have inhibited, people from really developing and taking advantage of custom silicon. And then at the same time, there's kind of like this significant gap in terms of the potential and need of going forward, especially when you look in the marketplace and you see the evolution of, artificial intelligence and machine learning and, sensing, kind of applications that have real world sensing requirements, right? And there's a, I think a lot of that is kind of setting the stage for kind of the potential demand and need for people to get optimized, kind of more optimized solutions to enhance and enable and deliver kind of unique applications. So I think that's one of the things I think is exciting, like where we're at now. And then I think you know, on top of that, we have, the current, things in the silicon industry in terms of just the supply chain and the availability of and some of the supply chain chain constraints and some of the requirements around security that are continuing to evolve. I think there's just a significant number, a convergence of a number of factors there that's going to really potentially change, drive some significant changes and or set the stage to allow for some significant changes to take place in terms of how microelectronics are developed and delivered.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I've seen the same things. It is exciting. So let's talk a little bit about the customer base for eFabless. Give me a feeling for what the demographic looks like. How many individual designers, small companies, mid-sized companies? Now, there was a comment about Google, so that's clearly none of the above. That's a gargantuan company, so clearly you have some integrations with those folks too. But what does the customer base look like in terms of size? And, if we were to plot it out, what would we see roughly?
Sure. Yeah. So let me just set the context a little bit for that, right? So we have a couple of significant things as a starting point, right? So one of the large engagements we've had is with Google, and kind of what really kind of came out of that is the Google sponsored an initiative to bring to the marketplace the first kind of fully open source PDK. Right, which is process development kit for, so it's basically access to foundry technology without the requirement of an NDA or license agreements or any kind of hurdles, right? So what that really did is kind of open the door for true collaboration. Now all of a sudden you have a scenario where people can work, from different organizations and different teams and different parts of the world can work together and collaborate around doing the design development. They can talk to each other freely without having to have mutual NDAs in place or any constraints around the access to technology or communication or sharing of information with technology, right? And so that was kind of key. And so from that, Google created a program that was managed by eFabless to allow people to fabricate their designs using this new process technology. Right, and the process technology is kind of based out of a foundry in Minnesota called Skywater Technologies, right? And when you look at the participation in that, program, that has a lot of individual designers today, right? So there's a, I think they kind of span between university and academics, and then you have a lot of other individuals that are working kind of on their own, or they may be at a company, but they're doing their own side projects and trying out and experimenting and contributing designs into that program. And so that's, I think, from the individual versus organization perspective, that's kind of one piece. On the back of this, you know, initiative and Google program for that, you know, sponsors prefabrication, and again, the requirement of those is that they're purely open source designs, right? So what we saw, there's a demand and need for people who want to then, you know, for either they want to be able to, so, you know, take advantage of that same process, but they would want to do something commercial, and they want something that doesn't have to be open source. And so we offered a solution called ChipIgnite that really provides that, that, you know, that to the marketplace. And it also enables people to have a guaranteed slot on a shuttle so they can, you know, ensure that their project gets fabricated. And so with that, we're seeing kind of a mix of still academic users in that are in that mix, but we're also seeing more commercial people that have some commercial intent as well, right? So they're either they are, you know, in typical many cases, they're looking at, they're building, they may have tried something on the open shuttle, you know, the open source shuttle, and now they want to go back and do a commercial, a project based off that experience that has some sort of commercial application. They may be looking at kind of a proof of concept or a prototype with the intent to then, you know, carry that forward into a product. Or there, again, in some cases we have, you know, we have like some research labs, people that are, you know, kind of part of a research lab, and they're doing, you know, again, they initially trying out this, the overall process to understand how it works, but then looking at it to use it as a vehicle for exploration and innovation, to kind of try out concepts that wouldn't have necessarily got the funding or the support through a traditional, you know, sure, delivery. Yeah,
it makes sense. You know, I did a lot of work with university folks on a different MPW program a while ago, and I found that most university professors, when I asked them for their business card, they looked at me and said, "Do you want my startup card or my professor card? I have both." You know, that's what happens a lot of times. So I get where you are today. It makes perfect sense. You know, crystal ball question, next 5 years, how do you see that customer base changing? Do you see a mixture of larger companies? How do you think the growth will occur?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, we expect, you know, the first stage here, there's going to be a significant growth in, I think there is a lot of low hanging fruit in the academic and university area. I do think that's important. And I think it provides a lot of value in terms of building the ecosystem and the community and the capabilities, both in terms of just the experience and the capabilities to deliver, you know, custom silicon, but also generating, you know, the content and the IP that can be then leveraged into commercial applications. So I think over the next 5 years, you're going to see more and more commercial folks coming and taking advantage of that to do new products, right? And both kind of the categories I mentioned, and not only just for, you know, POCs, but also to support some of the initial volume production volume requirements that they might have. And that still may be below kind of the typical threshold that a foundry or a traditional turnkey ASIC provider would support. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity for that, particularly as you look at this long tail, you know, opportunity in the marketplace.
Yeah.
I do think there's also opportunity for larger organizations as well, right? So I think, you know, there are some large organizations that are watching and looking at what we're doing. They're either, you know, looking at potential projects where they can start to test drive the overall solution. Some of those are, you know, looking at like internship programs that they have, where they're going to get some of their interns involved and actually, you know, delivering projects initially. But I think long term, over time, I think there is an opportunity that that, you know, this community driven model will be more competitive. And it'll be a competitive question of whether that the larger companies will you know, consider in terms of how they deliver, you know, product to marketplace, that there's an alternative that's more competitive and more cost effective
Sure, offer. Another choice. It's compelling. Yeah. I get it. You know, I just have one other question, sort of a fundamental one. How does eFabless make money? And maybe that changes over time. Can you tell us a little bit about what the process is whereby you guys, I can see how your customers will make money if they come up with the next great thing, but how do you make money?
Right. Yeah. So I think, you know, again, back to what Mike described, right? Our real goal is to enable, you know, orders of magnitude more people to be able to create designs, you know, create chips, create silicon, create electronics, right? And then, you know, with the assumption that that's going to drive, you know, more opportunities and more innovation in the marketplace over time. And our whole business model is really around, you know, kind of capturing value during the, you know, during the process of enabling those designs to market. So it's not just like just the fabrication part of it that we have today, but I think over time it'll extend into, you know, other types of design assistance type services, support, education, and as well as, you know, we envision enabling a marketplace where users and community can monetize their both their IP and design content that they can make available to others to use, as well as, you know, even services that they would provide to support others who are trying to get things done.
Okay, thanks. That's a great, good overview.
Yeah, great conversation, guys. Thanks. Mike Wishart, can you close us out here? Do you have some final thoughts?
Well, I think, and you have followed us. It's been great working with SemiWiki over the years, because you've been able to see how this has grown. I think if I had to leave a thought going ahead, what's going to make all of us at eFabless very satisfied is when we look down the road and all of a sudden the number of people who are designing chips and going to all these conferences we've gone to forever is growing by orders of magnitude, and they're not of our age, but they're of our children's age. And when people ask them, well, how did you create that? They said, I was able to do that because of what eFabless did. And, you know, they inspired me to learn how to do a chip, and now I did it, and now I've got this great product. So that's what we want. We think that's a big deal. We think that's going to be a big win for everybody.
I agree. It's an interesting story, and there's still much more to tell. So we will definitely have you guys back. So that concludes our podcast today. Thank you, Mike, and thank you, Jeff, for your time. And thank you for everybody for tuning in to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.